Get ready to shop Lowe's Black Friday Doorbuster Deals to save $150 on a 30-inch Blackstone griddle, now $299. Plus, choose a Whirlpool top load washer or Midea top freezer refrigerator for just $398. These limited-time Doorbuster Deals go fast, so get holiday ready today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid 11/28 through 12/1. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This city lives and breathes sports. WFAN is where Yankees fans argue with Mets fans and Giants fans debate Jets fans. Live, loud, and daily. The Fan, 101.9 FM and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
His wife. And how we doing on this Monday morning? McMonagle here with you. I got you for another hour. So the warm-up show comes your way, 888-808-1019. We got Alex on the other side, and we're taking your calls for another hour. Spent a lot of time on the Jets and the uneasy feeling that Jet fans, it seems most Jet fans have. It's what I would have if I were a Jet fan, as they did take down the Atlanta Falcons 27-24. They made a bunch of plays on special teams. Good kick return that set them up. A fumble, a muffed kick return, or a fumble recovery that set them up. You got really good performances from young wide receivers. That's precisely why you went to Tyrod Taylor, to see if you could evaluate those wide receivers, because Justin Fields can't throw. And the coach, who is a young coach and learning, has done a better job over the last few weeks, and the team certainly hasn't tuned him out as they continue to play hard for him. You did see some bad penalties, a stupid taunting penalty, and a false start right before the game-winning kick. That would have been a devastating miss had it happened. But ultimately, again, yes, those are the positives. But the negatives are that at 2-9, does the third win actually matter? Do we care more about the draft status? Do you impact, you know, the drafting of the young quarterback, who clearly is, to me, the next thing that needs to be done come April, and the thing that's going to decide whether or not this is going to be a successful tenure with this coach and Muji, the GM. So, like, with this many games left, it's hard to scream about. I think that's really the main takeaway here, and I said this the other day. It's just a lot of games left. They have 5 games after this. There are bad teams out there, but the thing I do, and you know, like, it's still 5 games. It's not like it's like the last game of the season. Like, for me, last year, I was furious at the Giants with the Colts game. It's the second to last game of the year. You had the first pick in your hands, and you end up, you know, losing, winning that game. And it's not so much that you're mad at them winning that game. It's that, why the hell couldn't you win the games when they matter? And it's frustrating, and there's a clear, tangible advantage where I don't know if you could build winning and all that, but there's 5 games left. But the one thing I don't want to hear that seems to bother me the most is that these Jet fans continue to say, well, they have so many picks, they can move up and get their quarterback anyway, so it's not the same. You know, they need the young quarterback, yeah, but they have 2 in this year's first round. They have 3 next year's first round. Like, and there's a bunch of teams here, the Giants, the Tennessee Titans, who don't need quarterbacks. Like, You just had this great trade deadline. You want to trade all those assets to move up to draft a quarterback? Like, you just told me, like, a lot of, oh, it's not even a great quarterback class. So now you're moving up and trading draft assets to move up and take a draft quarterback and draft a quarterback that you don't know. Plus, like, the Saints are ahead of you. The Vegas Raiders are ahead of you. The Cleveland Browns are ahead of you. Those teams might all be drafting quarterbacks. So I think it's an uneasy feeling for Jet fans, and we spent a lot of time on it this morning. We can still take your calls out at 888-808-1019. And then, of course, we got the Giants tonight. They're 2-10. I'm not sure how much a 3-10 win, 3-10 would mean for them, although at least Jackson Dart is back, the return. 2 weeks off after the concussion. Obviously, new head coach. This is the first time he'll be playing under Mike Kafka as opposed to Brian Daboll. He had some comments on Brian Daboll earlier in the week, praising him, talking about how much he loved him, how he probably wouldn't be here if not for Brian Daboll. He seems to be willing to give the coach credit where the fan base will not. But obviously good to have him back. Obviously he needs to play. Like, I'm looking forward to tonight, and I love the matchup in particular because I look at the Patriots and I don't see why the Giants can't be the next year's New England Patriots, the next year's Chicago Bears, who are now the one seed in the NFC. And with a win against the Giants, New England could go back to being the one seed in the AFC as they are, you know, technically right now behind the Broncos who won last night. But, like, this is exactly, and I talked about this last week, if you look at last year's team, the New England Patriots were in the exact same position the Giants are now, right? We didn't know it necessarily, but you, now that we look back on it, we understand that Mayo was never long for that job. They probably had Vrabel specifically ready to take over, but they were on a coach who was either, in this case now, fired, but you knew he was going to be a one-and-done coach in New England. You had Drake May, who had impressed people early on, played well, but not exceedingly well, but well enough where you believed in the promise of who he is. He suffers a concussion against the Jets. He leaves that game. He comes right back the next week, plays out the stretch, meaningful games that he lost, important games for a rookie to play. Nobody yelled that he can't play off a concussion. He was back the next week, didn't even get a week off. He played out the rest of that season. They hired a new head coach in Mike Vrabel, who's obviously one of the better head coaches in the NFL. And immediately, here they are with Drake May playing like an MVP. There is no reason that the Giants, with a stud wide receiver in Neighbors, hopefully returning and healthy, with Cam Scadaboo, with an offensive line that continues to play better week by week, a defense that has been disastrous but does have a lot of talent on it, and thankfully, it sounds like Dexter Lawrence is going to play in this game. Like, they have the young draft pick in Carter that you expect to get better in his second year. You've got Dexter Lawrence. You've got Burns, who's right there at the top of the league in sacks. You've got some talent, and you're going to have what will most likely be a top five pick in the NFL draft. All of those reasons, not only do they make that an enticing job for any head coach, which I don't think there's any doubt, no matter what happens the rest of the way, no matter how many teams decide to fire their coach Black Monday, I would think that this is going to be the most enticing job for any head coaching candidate of any of the vacancies. So if you get the right coach, you bring in the right offensive coordinator, and we know it's not going to be Lane Kiffin, and maybe we'll have time over the next couple of days to talk about that fiasco as he is leaving for LSU and not for the New York Giants, but and not staying in Ole Miss. But there is no reason. There is talent on this team. And Jackson Dart has shown promise, but he needs to play. And I'm looking forward to this matchup because I look directly across the field at a New England Patriots team that could be the Giants next year. And at least with him on the field, I know the Jameis Winston experience is fun. And I'm not even knocking it. I know some will. I won't. I thought he played great. You know, they had two trick plays for touchdowns, which is very rare, and that's what kept them in that game against Detroit, but they were competitive against the Bears. They were competitive against the Green Bay Packers, competitive against the Lions. And I know the Bears wasn't Jameis Winston, but like they've been competitive the last three games. It's been fun watching Jameis Winston play, but Jackson Dart is the starting quarterback. and having him back and ready to go. And I even thought some of the sound that, you know, some of the things he said earlier in the week were positive for me in many ways. Like we talked, he had the concussion and, oh, but he was in the tent four times. He said specifically three of the four times had nothing to do with his head injury. And that he has been getting better. And if you look back, he has been. He's been sliding more. He's trying to do his best to get down. And I don't think you can take the run game out of it. Like, I'm still running him. I'm not eliminating the RPOs. I'm not eliminating the call design runs. I'm not. That's who he is. He needs to learn how to do that and do it safer. But he needs to develop. He needs to be out there. And as long as he is out there, then there is a reason. And unlike the Jets, who we've been talking about all morning, the one scenario where I do put stock into how the season ends going into next year is if it's with that young quarterback. If it's with, like, Eli Manning down the stretch of the 2004 season. I reference that a lot. And also, I talked about this on Friday, as I just saw Jerry out in the newsroom. His Dallas Cowboys are on fire. They have beaten the Chiefs and the Eagles, the two champion, two Super Bowl teams, within a span of 4 days. Everybody's talking about the thing that came out of Thanksgiving was, you know, Joe Burrow immediately turns the Cincinnati Bengals back into a contender, although I don't think they're going to have a chance at making the playoffs, but immediately he steps on the field, the Bengals are a different team. You've got the idea that the Chiefs might miss the playoffs, amazingly enough, if they don't win out the rest of the way, and that the Dallas Cowboys have thrusted themselves right in to an NFC playoff picture if they can go on a run, and it starts with the Lions this week, and after that, the schedule lightens up for them. And you could see the Cowboys trying to make a run and sneak into the playoffs here. And then you get to the idea that they're dangerous with that passing attack. And I just can't help but think of looking at New England and what they are this year and how the Giants can become that. And then going all the way back to the last time that we had a franchise quarterback, rookie franchise quarterback from Ole Miss, who played out the stretch of the season and then beat the Dallas Cowboys the last game of the year at home. And the Giants this year, the last game of the year, will be the Dallas Cowboys at home. And as much as I am a tanker, and as much as I believe in the draft pick over some sort of imaginary winning culture that never seems to translate, I will tell you this, with a young franchise quarterback playing down the stretch of the season, getting impactful snaps, impactful reps, impactful progress, seeing how defenses attack him, learning his teammates, who there are young, talented players who are going to be with him next year. The first time he's going to see Hodgins, who I think should be back next year. He's shown that he can be functioning for the New York Giants. You're going to have neighbors. Again, we talked about all the talent they might have. If you go into that last game of the year against the Dallas Cowboys with a chance to maybe wreck their playoff hopes, like, these are important games. So unlike the Jets, who are playing out the stretch with Tyrod Taylor, this is not the Jameis Winston show. This is the Jackson Dart Show. And these games are important. And tonight is important. And going up against a good quality team, the best team in the AFC for most of the year here, on a long winning streak, that's a well-coached team. It's got a good defense. It's got one of the, you know, handful of guys who are right there for the MVP discussion in Drake May. This is a big-time game. Heading into the bye next week, this is a game you want to see them go out and play well and continue to do what they've been doing, which is to stay in close games. And so I expect that. I expect a well-played game. I expect a close, hard-fought game. And even though it might hurt them in the tankathon, they already have their quarterback, so it concerns me less. And I do think that developing a young quarterback impacts next year more than just the idea of finding ways to win, build, and breed, and they don't. But the young quarterback, I'm into it. 888-808-1019, so that's the Giants story. And then we can get into a little bit of the Mets, as there was a new wrinkle in reporting yesterday, as we heard the story from Mike Puma on Friday, where he told us that on a June 20th game against the Philadelphia Phillies, that there was a play not made by Jeff McNeil, and Lindor and McNeil got into it again in the middle of a 7-game losing streak. John Boy put out the play that most people feel is the play in question. It was a ground ball to second base by Kyle Schwarber with the score already 8-2 Philadelphia late in the game, and that the throw to the shortstop to turn two wasn't good enough, and Schwarber did beat out the throw and they didn't turn a double play. And apparently that might be the play that caused another fight. And then the other story is obviously Lindor and Soto's chilly relationship. And quoting the idea that Soto only cares about winning. He just wants to show up to the ballpark, do his thing, win games, and that's it. He's not focused on fashion and other things like Francisco Lindor. And we spent some time on Saturday talking about it and the idea of, like, where did this come from? Who's the source? And does it even matter? And I think most people, and I recently watched Evan's Rico Bronya, and he kind of said the same thing. I was thinking, like, I think most people are going to think that it's Brendan Nimmo. Like, all of a sudden, Thanksgiving weekend, that's when you get this story. Someone close to the team, someone close to the situation was aware of a fight inside the clubhouse. Well, you know, Brendan Nimmo did just leave. Brendan Nimmo was reportedly unhappy of all the talk about Francisco Lindor being captain of the team. And then here's this story that I sort of, I guess, paints him in a bad light. I mean, the McNeil thing doesn't at all. Because I joke all the time that all of us, like, we scream for accountability like it's the cure. Like, every team that's ever lost because of analytics and that there's no accountability. Like, everything is down to accountability. I'm pretty sure Goliath lost to David because he didn't hold himself accountable. That's probably why that rock hit him right between the eyes, because he didn't hold himself accountable. There was no accountability there. And yet here's the pseudo wannabe captain that we think of, that last year we were wondering if he was going to be announced as captain during David Wright Day, holding a player accountable late in the game, down 8-2, doesn't matter. The plays need to be made. And there's a leader holding Jeff McNeil accountable. Now, who's going to take Jeff McNeil's side in that argument for a Met fan? So that's, like, to me, the same old. We know those two don't get along. They had a history about fighting with raccoons or any other, scavenger animal that was in the locker room. We all think, most Met fans, I think, that Jeff McNeil needs to go and that we've seen enough of Jeff McNeil in a Met uniform. So I don't know what level that is. And then as far as the Soto Lindor thing, it's not that big a deal, but here's the thing I will say about it. Because, one, is it trying to paint the idea that Lindor doesn't care about winning? Because the idea that Soto only cares about winning and doesn't care about fashion and other things, and that's why they don't get along, like, is that sort of intimating that, like, Lindor doesn't only focus on winning and he has other things on his mind? I had a caller on Saturday call me up and say, I buy it because, you know, he wears a lot of different colored gloves. I was just like, what are we talking about? This is the guy who saved the season last year, who called the meeting, who was the focus of the meeting, who spoke after the meeting, and then who, by the way, played like an MVP and hit home runs in game one of the doubleheader against Atlanta and hit the home run against Philadelphia and carried you down the stretch and thrusted himself into the MVP conversation. Like, that's the guy who doesn't care about winning? That's the guy who's more focused on fashion? Like, I just find the whole premise dumb, but here's the real question. Right? All of this is nonsense. And with one breath, you can say that it doesn't matter. That the teams don't have to get along. That players don't have to get along. Right? The 86 Mets hated each other. Right? Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter never got along. The Bronx's burning Yankees in 77 and 78 hated everybody. Thurman Munson and Reggie Jackson despised each other. Reggie Jackson and the manager, Billy Martin, couldn't stand each other. Fought openly in the dugout in Boston. Famously, they couldn't get along, that bunch, and they won championships. Aha, that's the difference. They won. Sure, you can win it. You can win as the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates of 1979, or you can win as guys who don't like each other and there's 25 different dinners every night and everybody wants to go home, or this one's into fashion and this one's into golf and, you know, this one plays bingo. I don't care. Sure, you can win any which way. But they haven't won. this core, this group, and I know Soto is new to it, but this group just came off an absolutely devastating failure of a season, which is probably the biggest failure in Mets history when you take into account expectations and the new playoff format. To get beat out by the Cincinnati Reds with their payroll and a team that went to the NLCS last year and added Juan Soto, that's as big a disappointment as the Mets may have ever had regular season. So, yeah, you can not get along, you can get along, as long as you win, no one cares. But if you're losing, now the question is, does that dynamic impact the losing? And that's a question for Stearns, and that's a question for the owner, and that's the question for Mendoza, and that's what the real point of this is to me on some level, is I don't care whether or not they're best friends. I know, I guess there was some reporting at the very end of the season from Fox News, Fox Sports, rather, I'm sorry, that had Lindor quoting, saying, you know, listen, that Soto just wants to come to the ballpark and go home. It's all about family. He doesn't want to come out with us. He doesn't want to do things, and that's fine. We love him. Everything's great. But he's just, you know, that's the way he handles things. So is that normal? Or do we understand that they aren't best friends or whatever? That's fine. But here's the question. Not that either of them are going anywhere, but does the room need changing? Is there something inside this clubhouse that needs to be tweaked a little bit? Does the core of this team and the feel of this team, did that impact the inability to pull themselves out of the swoon? Because we talk a lot about how the Yankees, year in and year out, have the June swoon. They pull themselves out of it. They won 94 games. They were, yes, the wild card team, but they did win more games. They won the most games in the American League. And that's, I'm just saying, like, why couldn't the Mets find a way down the stretch of the season with all the talent and all the money to beat out the Cincinnati Reds and not score a run the last game of the year against the Marlins? Doesn't matter how we view it. Doesn't matter who's trying to, you know, if it's whoever it might be giving information to Mike Puma to try and make Lindor look bad or the team look bad or whatever look bad, McNeil look bad, whoever. How does Stearns view it? Because we talked about the Nimmo trade. The Nimmo trade, to me, is specifically to get rid of Brandon Nimmo. Because you can tell me all you want, and a lot of the stuff they tell you about Marcus Semien is the guy he is in the room. Right? That's been a lot of it. Winner, champion, hard worker. This goes back to the stories of the team in 23. About not working hard enough. Tommy Pham telling us it's the least hardworking team I've ever been a part of. But he's a champion. He's a hard worker. But to me, the Mets got worse with this deal. Like, there's no doubt about it. I find it hard to argue that the Mets didn't take a step back. Now, is the point that the step back makes it easier to make two steps forward? That seems to be the argument and seems to be without question. The thought process is that it's the first of many moves, which I agree with. It clearly is. And we'll judge it by the end of the offseason, how the team looks, how that trade opened them up to other things. I'm not looking to grade the Mets on just that one trade. But if you are looking at it, talent in, talent out, they got worse. And to me, it was about opening up left field. It was about making sure that, you know, Nimmo wasn't a depreciating player who had to DH, and they were going to play the prospects over anyway, and within a year, they wouldn't be able to move him because he's no longer a left fielder. He's no longer playing every day. He's no longer worth anywhere near $20 million, and they felt like now was the time to get rid of him. But could it be that they view this core and this entire outfit needs a little bit of a tweaking? And what does that mean for Pete Alonso? What does that mean for how they feel about this group in general? How many dramatic changes are coming? Is this just a non-story about two guys who just aren't best friends and there's no issue with that whatsoever? Is this just another story about two teammates who get into each other's face every once in a while and that can be good? You can make a case every once in a while, and who cares if Lindor and McNeil don't get along? Or is it viewed inside the organization as a bit of a problem that needs a little bit tweaking. I don't know the answer, but does it make you think, does it make you turn a little bit of a turn head to the idea that the first thing they did was move on from Nimmo? And then does it make you look a little bit at it and go, well, that's weird that the story came out the minute Nimmo left? And if so, was Nimmo more of part of this culture problem than anybody else? I don't know. All I know is they didn't win enough last year. They got to win more this year, and we'll see what they do as a complete offseason. And Lindor and Soto aren't going anywhere, and you don't have to be best friends. You have to win. And when you don't win, all this stuff gets thrown into the pile as a problem. We can get into the recent story of Senga wanting to stay. I don't know exactly what that means. Like, Senga wants to stay. Okay. If I want to move him, I'm going to move him. Does it make me feel better about the idea if Senga ends up staying and they can't find a trade partner for him that I know he's committed to being here and wants to win? I suppose. But if I'm David Stearns and I'm looking to shop him because I think it's what's best for the team and because I can't trust him, help, like, does it matter that he said, I really want to stay? We know when players go and demand out, that usually means you probably should acquiesce because who the hell wants a player who doesn't want to be here? But I think it's in the best interest of the Mets to still move on from Kodai Senga. You can't trust him. He doesn't give you enough innings. And he was terrible last year. And you're looking to get more, you know, you need some more reliable arms in that starting rotation. So I appreciate he wants to be here, but it shouldn't impact the Mets at all. And then Framber Valdez, we talked about that on Friday too. The report from Hector Gomez, who has been right and has been wrong, talking about the Mets very interested in Framber Valdez. So we can get to that as well.
At Lowe's, before the holidays is the perfect time for upgrades and upkeep. During Black Friday, get up to 50% off select major appliances and buy more to save more with up to an additional 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Plus, grab select DeWalt 20-volt max drill or impact driver kits for just $99. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Tell Siri to dial the fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Count on Sundays all season long with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
All right, 435. Someone hit me up on Twitter. I guess I didn't make it clear. I don't know if I said it, but obviously it wouldn't be a story if Senga didn't have a no-trade clause of some value. He's got a limited 10-team no-trade clause. So it wouldn't be a story that he wants to stay if he didn't have a no-trade clause. The point is, so did Nimmo. Nimmo had to waive it to go to Texas. And yeah, maybe Senga would rather be here, but if he's, they can trade him to 20 other teams where he can't stop them. And two, you would think they went to him and said, look, this is the deal. We no longer value you. Just like Nimmo, you could get him to move. My point is, it shouldn't entice the Mets to feel any differently about how they feel about him. It's a story if it's Kodai Senga has refused to move his no-trade clause, and it has blown up a trade to so-and-so. That's a story. Saying, hey, just in case, while you're shopping me, just know, I'd like to be here. I don't know if that impacts anything. Like, if the story is he was traded to the Chicago Cubs and he had a no trade to the Cubs, he's blocked it, so that trade is dead. That's a story. But the idea of he just like knocked on the door and said, hey, while you're trying to see what you can get from me, just know I'm with you guys. I'd like to be here. I still look for trades and then try and convince him to waive his no trade clause if it's to one of the 10 teams. 888-808-1019, as they did with Nimmo. We'll take your calls. Here's Jody in Corum wants to talk about Nimmo. What's up, Jody?
Hey, Chris. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Fantastic. Really quick, you were talking about Nimmo maybe dropping a dime on this nonsense.
Well, I have no idea, but it's funny timing. He just left, and it's inside the clubhouse stuff.
Yeah.
So, we talked about it on Saturday, and then I went back and I listened to Evan's Rico Bronya on it, and he suggested the same thing. It just makes sense. It's just, I don't know for sure, but it feels like it's odd timing for it to not be Nimmo. But
yeah, I was thinking it might have been Acevedo because he's a bit of a dude.
I don't know who. I don't know who it could have been. Are you saying Ottavino? Is that what you meant because of the podcast? That's where I got Ottavino's the podcast Ottavino did, where he kind of really went after Mendoza and the way he handles the bullpen. He also talked about Nimmo and the pride Nimmo has about being a Met and how he felt. Again, he didn't specify any conversation he had with Nimmo, but he felt like Nimmo was uneasy about the talk of Lindor being the captain, considering he was the longest term tenured Met, and he's talking about possibly having his number retired if he stayed there. So I think he felt that it was unfair. But again, that's just Nimmo. That's just Ottavino surmising a situation, which maybe. And look, I'm not saying it was Nimmo. I have no idea who gave Mike Puma the story, and I'm not even sure how much of a story it is, really. It made news, it made the back page, if that's still a thing. And it's worthy of talking about because, again, I don't think it matters unless you're not winning. When you're not winning, you have to look at everything. When you're not winning, you have to look at everything as the cause. When you're a team with that payroll and that talent and you have that kind of season, you have to look at everything. And we're going to mention, because I know it's coming. Like, when you talk about this story and you talk about how teams don't have to be friends, you're going to reference winning teams, obviously. But you gotta be the winning team. Like, yeah, it's okay. It doesn't mean you can't win this way. That's the moral of the story, I suppose. You can hate each other and still win, but you have to win. And that's a fine line. And it's up to the Mets to determine what kind of line that is. Now, I don't think Lindor and Soto are going anywhere. I don't think that's a major problem. I don't think they hate each other. I think they're different. I think the quote about Soto and Lindor from the Puma story kind of makes it seem, at least a little bit, that they're trying to say that Soto cares more about winning than Lindor, which I think is ridiculous. I think is patently ridiculous. Now, he had issues with the fan base and didn't have a great first year when first traded here from Cleveland. But I mean, and he's not the perfect player, and he's had some seasons and some offensive seasons that, you know, can be streaky, to put it kindly. And, you know, he's just not a year in and year out superstar, and he gets paid like that, although he's given you at least one superstar season, and he's pretty damn good. And as far as shortstops go, hard pressed to find a hell of a lot better ones. There's only a couple tops. And he was extremely clutch and carried you to the NLCS. I think it's completely unfair to suggest Lindor cares about anything more than winning. People have other interests. Doesn't mean he doesn't care about winning. And Soto apparently doesn't. Other than making weird birthday videos and hanging out with his family, he doesn't seem to have any other interests. But, I mean, it's just different now. And I know this, and maybe we'll try to explain why Soto wasn't Soto. And I know that's a big, you know, because there's no doubt. And this isn't coming, you know, as any time I talk Mets, this is the assumption from Met fans that this is where it's coming from. It's not coming from some butthurt Yankee fan. Like, it's just honest. We all saw it with our eyes. The dude was not himself for the first couple months of the season for whatever reason. And I don't think it was because he missed being a Yankee, because you saw, like, he had a chilly relationship with the Yankees. Let's be honest. It didn't manifest itself in the same way outwardly during the season, because I would argue that he looked comfortable and happy and everything Juan Soto has been his whole career with the Yankees immediately. The shuffle was there. The exuberance was there. The fun was there. Like, everything was there from day one with the Yankees. But at the end, no, you know, he changed his number. I didn't talk to him. I didn't get in touch with him. We didn't really talk. Like it sounded like they weren't that close. Even if he seemed happier as a Yankee early on, at least, it wasn't manifested because they were just so, you know, everyone was best friends. Didn't feel that way. And then the other thing that came up in the story, too, is the Marte comments that Soto made earlier in the year, talking about Marte is the leader of the team, Marte this, Marte that, you know, right in the middle of all this discussion about Soto, about Lindor becoming the captain. And it felt like that those were pointed comments to take the attention off of Lindor being the captain when the real leader was Marte from Soto. So, like, you put those together and, you know, maybe they're not the best of friends. Which is fine, but you got to win. If not, everything is up for grabs. Everything is subject to change. Everything is on the table for discussing why you didn't win. You win 83 games with that team, you lose out to the Cincinnati Reds, the idea that your two best players don't like each other suddenly becomes a discussion. If you're Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter and you're winning World Series, no one gives a damn. If you're Thurman Munson and Reggie Jackson and you're Mr. October and, you know, the captain, no one gives a damn. But, you know, if you're the highest payroll in baseball and you were in the NLCS last year and you added the biggest free agent in the history of the sport and you got worse, well, now it's a discussion. Now the relationship becomes a thing. Which I don't think is unfair. You can call it a nothing burger. You could say it's meaningless, and I won't even disagree with you. I'm just saying it is fair to make it a discussion because of the losing, because of the season they just had. It's on the table. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And then the other news that came out, we talked about it again on Friday, Framber Valdez being thrown around as a possibility for the Mets. And I don't get it. I really don't get it. I'd be surprised. David Stearns has talked about not being, you know, beholden to this idea of not spending money on top price free agents. That's how he's handled it. That's been our assumption as fans and onlookers, that he doesn't want to pay, certainly on long-term contracts, free agents starting pitching in their 30s, right? It's felt like a hard and fast rule. He's talked about how it's not. It's just for the right player. It's for the right talent, for the right top of the rotation guy. And I just would be surprised. And again, it's a report from Hector Gomez. He's been right on some things. He's been wrong on some things. It's not like it's Jeff Passan or John Heyman or Ken Rosenthal or Morosi or any of the guys that we traditionally get these breaking stories from. Not that they're right all the time either. But I would, and that report was 6 for $200 off of the Dylan Cease contract, where it was 7 for $210. Dylan Cease got $30 million a year from the Toronto Blue Jays. So now the report that the Mets would offer Framber Valdez 6 for $200, I'd be surprised that that's the guy. I'm not saying that David Stearns wouldn't bend his rule, break his rule, or even that he has a rule. I think for the right guy, he would. I think you have to. I think it's easy making those decisions in Milwaukee. I can't do that. What if we miss on that? It kills us. It won't kill the Mets. They spend enough money. They have enough talent where if Framber Valdez ends up being hurt in 2 or 3 years, you'll just sign somebody else. You'll do something else. Like you have to chase the championship. You have to bring in a guy at the top of the rotation. You have to do things that make you uncomfortable. I get into this conversation a lot when I defend Brian Cashman. Everybody says, oh, he couldn't run a team without a high payroll. He couldn't run a team without a high payroll. He is running a team with a high payroll. He is running a team with World Series expectations every year. He has to go make moves. He has to go do things that make him uncomfortable. You don't have to do that in Milwaukee. So David Stearns at some point is going to have to do something uncomfortable. Is 6 years at $200 million for Framber Valdez the uncomfortable thing that he's willing to do? That just strikes me. He's 32. He's not really a big strapping guy. He's kind of short, doesn't seem to be in the greatest of shape. Not that that's, you know, the be all end all. We've seen CC Sabathia pitch to that, although he was a big strapping man, obviously, but we've seen him pitch to bigger weight. Wells pitched to bigger weight. You know, we've seen heavier pitchers. You can get by, but at 32, do you think Framber Valdez is going to age all that great? Now he throws innings. He's reliable. He's been pretty damn good, if not really damn good. He doesn't get a lot of swing and miss. He puts the ball in play. They've just improved their defensive infield with Marcus Semien playing second base. I think there are better options on the trade market to impact them in the short term, waiting for the big deal of next year with Skubal. Whether they're able to trade for Skubal or not, whether the Tigers are willing to trade for Skubal or not, he's going to be a free agent next year. Whether he's traded or he's not, and whether it's to the Mets or not, he's a free agent next year. The Mets have to be at the top of that list. They have to be willing to spend whatever it takes to go get Skubal. In the short term, they have all these pitching prospects. They've talked about it. I would much rather them see them go trade for a controllable starting pitcher, right? Peralta is out there. Sandy Alcantara has been linked to the Yankees and other teams. He's been kind of on the market for 2 years now. I would rather go see them spend some of this capital they built up through the farm system than go spend a big-time contract and lock into a long-term deal for a pitcher who he had an issue with his catcher earlier in the year. I'd be surprised Framber Valdez is that guy that Stearns would go, okay, I know at some point I'm going to have to sign someone I'm uncomfortable signing. 32-year-old Framber Valdez is the guy I'm willing to finally go in on. When Corbin Burns wasn't, when other guys weren't. I'd be surprised. So I don't know if I'm into that. I don't know if I buy that report, nor would I do it if I were the Mets.
At Lowe's, before the holidays is the perfect time for upgrades and upkeep. During Black Friday, get up to 50% off select major appliances and buy more to save more with up to an additional 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Plus, grab select DeWalt 20-volt max drill or impact driver kits for just $99. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. you'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite team, The Fan, on the Odyssey iHeart and TuneIn apps.
All right, 4:54, just a few minutes. 888-808-1019. A few minutes left as I take it till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Just talking with Fleegs here again. And I just saw the sound from, or the clip from Mike Tomlin. I am, as we get ready to tonight, Monday Night Football, I'll be on right after the post-game, right after Schmelk and Tiki. I'll be on following the game tonight. I'm excited to see Jackson Dart back, but this is all about who the next coach is going to be, right? That's kind of where we are. Jackson Dart plays out the string, gets better, continues to progress. Again, I don't care so much about winning or losing. When you're 2-10, I don't know how you could. But this is all going to be about the future of the program. The future of the team is Jackson Dart and whoever the next coach is going to be, and or maybe GM. We'll see how that scenario plays out. I can't yell about Joe Shane anymore. He should be fired. I don't know if they're going to. Hopefully a coach comes in with enough cachet to say, I want my own GM. And that's why Mike Tomlin's part of the best answer for me. And I can't believe, like, and Pittsburgh Steelers fans that are chanting fire Tomlin in the crowd, I'll say to you what I say to Yankee fans about Brian Cashman. And forget about that for a second. Just look at the other coaches in the NFL. Look at how many disasters. Look at the Giants, the Jets, how many coaches they go through. Pittsburgh Steelers fans have had three coaches in the last 175 years. Like, seriously, Noel Cowher and Tomlin for the last, what, 50, 60 years? Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. And this dude, like right now, look at that roster. Look out. The defense isn't nearly as good anymore. The offense, they added, you know, Metcalf, but I think you could argue Pickens is just as good. Look what he's been able to do in Dallas. Aaron Rodgers, who I still think would have been a better option for the Jets, is not nearly what he used to be. And every year you are a winning team. Every year. With Rudolph, with it doesn't matter the lousy quarterbacks they have had since Ben Roethlisberger, he consistently turns a winner. Consistently. I know it gets old. I know it gets tired. I know you expect more. I get it. When you're the Pittsburgh Steelers and he's instilled that in you, I know you want more. But man, to be chanting fire Tomlin at the stadium, I hope it is. I've said this from day one. The minute they fired Brian Daboll, I was on Mike Tomlin to be the next head coach. I'm willing to trade a draft pick for him. I might get lucky enough for him to get fired now. This thing might be just finally falling apart in Pittsburgh. Hopefully they bottom out. Hopefully this is the beginning of the end for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they succumb to the pressure and fire him, because that is without question. I don't care about Mike McCarthy. And I know I'm big on working with the quarterback. I have talked about that. If you're going to hire a coordinator, I think it has to be an offensive coordinator. I want the coach-quarterback relationship, unless you're going to give me Bill Belichick, unless you're going to give me Mike Tomlin, unless you're going to give me Vrabel, unless you're going to give me John Harbaugh, unless you're going to give me the proven head coach that has now a track record of winning at a high level over and over and over again for years with different quarterbacks and different schemes and different teams and different coordinators, and just year in and year out consistently puts a winning product on the field. Unless you're going to give me one of those guys, I want an offensive mind. But I do think the Giants need to finally bring in someone with a pedigree, someone with a winning culture. And again, explain to me how anybody does it. Mike Tomlin is the best. Tell me Mike McCarthy is better. I mean, they both won a Super Bowl. He did beat Tomlin in the Super Bowl. He did give you a winner in Dallas for the most part. I mean, they won a lot of games. They had some disappointing playoff losses, but they won a lot of games. I'm open to Mike McCarthy, but to me, I've always viewed Tomlin as one of the better head coaches in the NFL. They are consistently a winner, consistently in the playoffs. He's done it with a washed-up Russell Wilson. Think about that. The two quarterbacks for the New York Giants who can't play. The two quarterbacks right now for the Jets and Giants who cannot play. Fields cannot play. Russell Wilson had to be benched and, you know, sent to Siberia. He took that team in the AFC to the playoffs with those two quarterbacks. I'll take Mike Tomlin. I hope it falls apart in Pittsburgh. And I hope he's the next coach of the New York Giants. That's my guy, and it's all coming to fruition, baby. That's it for me. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Alex on the other side. The warm-up show is next. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Again, I'll be with you after Jackson Dart's return. Monday night, prime time. And by the way, how nice was it not to have both the Giants and Jets on at 1 o'clock? That you could just focus on one game and then watch the red zone or whatever you do. That was great. So let's go, Giants. I'll catch you after the game. I'm out of here. Bye-bye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN.
At Lowe's, before the holidays is the perfect time for upgrades and upkeep. During Black Friday, get up to 50% off select major appliances and buy more to save more with up to an additional 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Plus, grab select DeWalt 20-volt max drill or impact driver kits for just $99. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.